From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we traveled to Russia to witness Peru's comeback to the World Cup 36 years later.
I do believe that that Uruguay at home win was when Peruvians started saying, hold up a second, maybe we can do this.
And we speak with the writer behind the complex Latino characters portrayed on the TV series Vida.
So often when we've gotten a chance to have a narrative about us, it's like the family has to be in primary colors and really bright and like, look how happy and look how we dance in the kitchen. And it's that narrative that we're used to. And my experience with my family is not that.
Plus, time traveling with the Colombian rock legends Aterciopelados. That's all coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No te vayas. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And to start things off today, I'm going to hand it over to Latino USA producer Janice Yamoka.
The first time I watched the Peruvian soccer team in person was in Los Angeles in 2009, when they played a friendly game against El Salvador. I was 21. The rain poured on us as we watched our team lose. I was there with my dad and a couple of other family members, and we were some of the only Peruvians soaking in a sea of blue and white. We cheered as loud as we could. My dad and I stood in the stands until the very end, hoping for a goal, but that moment never came. He stayed quiet. He probably saw it coming. Losing was nothing new. The other day I asked my dad, "Remember that game we lost 7-0? The one we watched in the rain?" He told me I was being dramatic and to Google it. It was actually just 1-0. But the loss seemed so much bigger and much more drastic in my head. We were the kind of team that would lose 7-0. The year after that rainy game, we ended up dead last in the South American qualifiers for the 2010 World Cup. I guess that pretty much sums up my memories of the Peruvian national team. Losing one game after another. Until last year, when everything finally changed. One life, live it up, 'cause you
don't get it twice. Over the past few weeks, just about everyone on the planet has been wrapped up in World Cup fever. And this year, it wasn't only the usual teams who were playing. You know, teams like Mexico, Argentina, Brazil. In fact, you could say that the 2018 Cup was the year of the underdogs, like Panama, which qualified for its first ever World Cup. Little Iceland also qualified for the first time, and Egypt qualified after 28 long years. But the underdog we're going to talk about today is Peru and their return to the World Cup after 36 long years. Producer Janice Yamoka is going to tell us the story.
Before we get started, there's a few things you should know about me. One, I was born in Los Angeles. California. And two, I'm Peruvian American.
Nosotros te hemos enseñado mucho la cultura de nuestro país.
That's my dad, Pepe. He's tall in his 60s with barely any white hairs and a bit of a reserved guy. He grew up in Peru in a city called Callao. He said that he and my mom taught me a lot about Peruvian culture. My parents left Peru in the mid-80s when the country was going through an economic and social crisis. For my parents, there wasn't a lot of time to learn what American culture was. So I was immersed in Peruvian culture growing up. For example, when my sister and I were kids,
cuando ustedes estaban pequeños, yo siempre le enseñaba, digamos, música de Perú.
My dad would play Peruvian music for us all the time in the house. Especially on the weekends when he would make ceviche. I kind of felt like I lived in a Peruvian restaurant. Aside from music, we ate lomo saltado, drank Inca Kola, and at one point, we had a replica of a gold tumi, a Peruvian ceremonial knife nailed to a wall. Oh, and I can't forget the collection of Yama dolls we have scattered around the house. And of course, when they could, my parents took us on an 8-hour plane ride to go play with all of our cousins that lived more than 4,000 miles away in Peru.
Entonces, todas esas cosas les han quedado a ustedes y yo pienso que eso sí, digamos.
All this to say, like my dad said, it's all a part of why my sister and I feel so Peruvian.
Como si fueran peruanas.
Being Peruvian was rare in Los Angeles, where almost every brown person is assumed to be Mexican. But a little Peru existed within the walls of my family's home. Oh, and one last thing. My dad also passed on his love for soccer, specifically Peruvian soccer. Every Saturday morning, I would wake up to the sounds of... Love and loyalty for the Peruvian national soccer team was practically a religion I was born into. And though it pains me to say, for my entire life, Peru has sucked at soccer. See, soccer is a lifestyle in Latin America, and Latin Americans pride themselves on playing it well. Countries like Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, they're not famous just for playing soccer, but playing it with their own signature style. And every 4 years, they go to the World Cup to show the world what they can do. Peru had never even qualified for a World Cup in my lifetime. But for my dad, it was different. He was there during a golden age of Peruvian soccer in the 1970s, when Peru made it back to the World Cup for the first time since 1930. My dad was 16 when it happened.
La gente de mi edad o gente mayores salían a las calles a hacer caravanas y...
He remembers people of all ages came together on the streets to cheer and run. There were parties everywhere.
Fiestas por aquí, por allá, en todo lugar.
Sí.
Pero fue emocionante también.
My dad says it was exciting, and I know you can't tell from his voice, but it was exciting. And he says he remembers it like yesterday, because soccer is his life.
Recuerdo todas esas cosas como si fuera ayer, porque esa ha sido mi vida. El fútbol es mi vida también.
The country went on to qualify for 3 World Cups in those years. And they even had special songs to motivate the team on the way to each cup. There's Peru Campeón, Peru the Champion, for the 1970 World Cup.
Peru Campeón, Peru Campeón.
Contigo Peru, with you Peru, for the 1978 World Cup.
Y así triunfaremos contigo, Peru.
And Peru a España 82, Peru to Spain 82, which, you guessed it, was composed for the 1982 World Cup in Spain.
Peru, España 82.
And that's where it ended. In the years that followed, the country suffered economically, and violence within the country began to rise.
Esta semana, los terroristas de Sendero Luminoso
atacaron because of armed insurgent groups like the Shining Path.
Y mataron a tres infantes de Marina en la zona...
This is around the time my parents left Peru and headed to the U.S. in search of a better life.
Es el dolor más grande que tuve, ¿no? De dejar a mi mamá en Perú y yo venirme para los Estados Unidos.
My dad says the hardest part about leaving Peru was leaving his mom, my grandmother, behind.
El 8 de diciembre
then,
de 1987, una tragedia aérea conmovió a todo Perú.
In the midst of the chaos, a plane carrying one of Peru's beloved club teams crashed into the Pacific Ocean, killing an entire team of promising young players. It was as if the dreams of the nation crashed into the Pacific as well. The country was heartbroken. It continued to suffer economically, and political chaos continued. For the people, it felt like in every single aspect, Peru's just not good enough. In the U.S., my parents settled in San Gabriel Valley, east of Los Angeles, living in apartments stuffed with family and friends who also made the trek from Peru. There, they began to form their own little community, and they kept their culture alive through music, food, and of course, cheering for the Peruvian national team. But the 70s soccer golden age marked the last time my whole family was together in Peru. And every time they share their stories, I'm instantly transported to that frozen era in time, before families were apart,
before a loved one started dying. And for me, I love hearing those stories. To imagine a happier time for both the Peruvian team and my family. But it's bittersweet, because I never actually experienced any of it.
But then, for the first time in my lifetime, Peru had a real chance. Qualifiers were underway to determine which teams would make it to the 2018 World Cup in Russia.
It's important to remember that at the beginning of these qualifiers, Peru was not doing well.
That's Luis Miguel Echegaray. He's the director of Latino content at Sports Illustrated, and he's Peruvian too.
We actually only won 2 matches out of the first 10.
But then... Peru beat soccer powerhouse Uruguay in the 5th-to-last qualifying game.
Peruano!
I do believe that that Uruguay at home win was when Peruvians started saying, hold up a second, maybe we can do this.
I watched the game alone through a live stream on my laptop in my apartment in New York City, on the other side of the country from my family in L.A. It was around this time I jokingly but semi-seriously called my dad and told him... If Peru goes to the World Cup, we're going. And he said yes, just to shut me up, I think. If you're not familiar with how teams qualify for the World Cup, consider this your quick lesson. There are only 32 spots in the World Cup. To get a spot, countries within each region compete against each other. So, European teams play against European teams, and Asian teams play against Asian teams, etc. And the South American qualifiers are arguably the most competitive. To make it to the World Cup, Peru would have to survive among soccer giants like Brazil and Argentina. This team had no well-known international stars, no Messis, no Neymars. But we did have Paolo Guerrero. A player with bad boy vibes, tattooed with slick back hair, and Peru's all-time leading scorer. And so, with a few games left, our World Cup dream almost seemed possible. And soon, the team found themselves facing 2-time World Cup champions, Argentina.
Le va a dar Messi. Messi busca centro. Sale el arquero.
Buena.
Arriba. Controló el arquero peruano.
And they tied. Meanwhile, in the Latino USA office...
The only thing I know about soccer is something about Peru is a big deal. Basically because of you. I'd say like maybe, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like once a week you wear your jersey.
That's producers Maggie Freeling and Antonia Cerejido. They and everyone else in the office witnessed me being completely obsessed with Peru in the World Cup qualifiers. Like I would bring the Peru flag to the office and hang it up on a wall on game days. Totally normal. By October, Peru was on a roll. They hadn't lost a game in 5 matches, but they had 1 game left against Colombia.
Tiene que tirar el centro, Paolo.
Dice Gustavo que Paolo busque la pelota ahí.
Es tiro libre indirecto, Paolo. Es tiro libre indirecto. Tiro libre indirecto. Tiro libre indirecto. Gol.
Which, thanks to a beautiful free kick from our captain Paolo, ended up in a tie. After all that fun math and all the points were added. We were in 5th place. So close. See, the way it works is that the first 4 South American teams go straight to the World Cup. And the 5th place team only goes to the World Cup if they play a 2-game playoff series against the top team in Oceania. In this case, New Zealand. But a week before the first game against New Zealand, news breaks out.
Paolo Guerrero fue suspendido 30 días.
Paolo Guerrero, the bad boy player I described earlier, and Peru's team captain, he was suspended by FIFA for 30 days for failing a doping test. Chemicals associated with cocaine were found in his system.
So before the Argentina game, Paolo Guerrero drank a mate de coca.
I know, it sounds shady, but Paolo claimed he accidentally drank mate de coca, or coca tea, which is a traditional tea from Andean nations like Peru and Bolivia. It's used to help with high altitudes. And since cocaine is derived from coca leaves, the tea has chemicals in it that can trigger doping tests. Either way, Paolo Guerrero was going to miss the playoffs. He helped the team get there, and it was up to the rest of the team to get to the World Cup. The first game, nobody scored, which put all the pressure on the second game.
This was the game that would decide it all. I even felt the pressure. So I did something a little extreme. On a whim, I flew across the country back home to my own little Peru to watch the game with my family in LA. If we won, we were going to the World Cup. My family packed the living room, all in red and white. My dad was on air horn duty. The game was tied 0-0. Then, in the 28th minute...
when Cristian Cueva held the ball, passed it to Farfán, the country just went insane.
In Peru, the celebration of people jumping and screaming after Farfán's goal was so intense, it activated an earthquake alarm detector in Chile.
That's when we started thinking, this is it, we're making it.
In LA, my family and I were glued to the screen. The clock was ticking, and Peru scored again. We won 2-0. We were the last country in the world to qualify. We were in. Peru was going to the 2018 World Cup in Russia. I love this team, not because I grew up in Peru, but because I grew up immersed in my family's love for their country, and especially their love for the family they had to leave behind in Peru. So when I hear this tape of my cousin crying, it's almost impossible for me to not start crying myself. And it's because I know, in that moment, she was probably thinking about her father, who passed away, and how ecstatic he would have been in that moment to see Peru make it. How she wished she could have had that moment with him. Everyone in my house gave each other big hugs that day, and I hugged my dad extra tight.
Coming up on Latino USA, the Yambocas go to Russia. Stay with us, no te vayas.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Kauffman Foundation, working together with communities in education and entrepreneurship to create uncommon solutions and empower people to shape their lives and be more successful. More online at Kauffman.org. And Carnegie Corporation of New York, recognizing the contributions of American immigrants in its Great Immigrants, Great Americans program this July. More at Carnegie.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And when we left off, Peru had just qualified for the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. Producer Janice Yamoka picks up the story now.
The day after Peru qualified, I was still a ball of emotions. I took out my recorder and talked to my dad at home in our kitchen. He says that now the world will know that Peru has what it takes to face any team. It was time to remind my dad about the deal we made, that if Peru made it, the two of us were going to the World Cup.
Bueno, vamos a Russia?
Claro, si se puede, sí, podemos irnos.
So we're going to Russia, I asked. And he said, sure, if we can. So I bought our plane tickets a week later. He was going on the ultimate father-daughter soccer adventure, and there was no turning back. A few weeks before the World Cup, I went into a recording booth at the Latino USA office.
This is a dream that's coming true, and it's weird. I'm still kind of in shock that I'm going to go in a few weeks, and maybe that's why it hasn't hit me.
And this envelope, I have another envelope, and I haven't opened it yet. But I believe that they're my tickets. Let's see. Okay, they're for sure my tickets. I learned the team chants and even memorized the Peruvian national anthem. I mean, if I'm going, I'm going all the way. My dad and I even learned some Russian.
Нет, да. Спасибо. Thank you.
Спасибо, güey.
That's all I know. That's all we're getting.
Vamos a traer más palabras de.
Then, a month before the World Cup started, FIFA ruled that Paolo Guerrero, our captain and star player, wasn't going to play in the World Cup because of the doping test. Without him, we didn't have much of a chance to do well in the tournament. We were devastated. There were protests in Peru.
Realizaron una marcha en apoyo al capitán de la selección. Hombres, mujeres y niños.
And literally, 2 weeks before the tournament started, he was finally and officially cleared to play. Okay, now that we have our star player and my dad and I are fluent in Russian, World Cup, here we come. The plane ride to Moscow was everything you would imagine a World Cup flight to be. Everyone was already wearing their team's jerseys, except my dad and I, who seemed like World Cup rookies in our regular clothes. The fans were basically split into two groups, Peru and Mexico.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Moscow. Our aircraft has landed.
It was the day before the World Cup started, and fans spilled all over the city. At this point, people were just thrilled to be there. Everyone seemed hopeful, and it was contagious. At the end of a long main street, my dad and I finally found the Peru fans. On the streets, Peru fans dressed up as Inca royalty wore traditional clothing from the areas they came from, and Peruvian Facebook showed there was a llama around Moscow that went viral. Well, it was a man wearing a llama costume, only to be eclipsed by another man dressed as a giant cuy, aka a guinea pig, a Peruvian delicacy.
Hola.
Hola.
We had a few days in Moscow before we had to travel for the first game against Denmark. I had an extra special surprise for my dad. I took him to meet a Peruvian soccer legend.
Bueno, mi nombre es Teófilo Cubillas.
Peruvian player Teófilo Cubillas. He was part of the 70s dream team.
Y tuve la felicidad de haber podido participar en tres Copas del Mundo.
You know, the team that took Peru to three World Cups, and someone my dad admires when it comes to Peruvian soccer. Teófilo is still one of Peru's leading scorers. We met him at his hotel in Moscow. He was there with Telemundo Deportes as an analyst for the matches.
Porque también había expresado, dije, ojalá que antes de yo tener que partir de este mundo, pueda volver.
Teófilo said that he hoped before he left this world, he would be able to see the Peruvian national team play in a World Cup again. And he finally got that opportunity. As for my dad, he had the chance to tell one of the players how happy the team made him back when he was living in Peru in the 70s. He kept it cool, kind of. He asked for an autograph before we left.
Yo te he visto jugar mucho tiempo en todos los mundiales. Me sentía, digamos, feliz. Y ahorita me siento más feliz todavía porque te he conocido personalmente.
No, al contrario, o sea...
And now I feel even happier because I've met you personally, my dad tells Teófilo. No, on the contrary, says Teófilo. Watching them talk, I felt like I was living a little piece of the golden era in real time. Anyway, it's time for the games. Peru Peru's first game against Denmark was taking place in a city called Saransk. The first game was crucial. If Peru beat Denmark, we could possibly advance to the next round. And late in the first half, we had a clear chance of scoring our first World Cup goal in almost four decades. The referee called a penalty in Peru's favor. Cristian Cueva stepped up to the ball, kicked, and completely missed. The ball flew over the post and into the crowd. They ended up losing to Denmark 0-1. The next game was played in Ekaterinburg. Peru was facing France this time. My dad and I met up with Peru fans and walked and sang together as a unit to the stadium. France was going to be Peru's toughest opponent yet in this group stage. It was getting close to kickoff time. I asked my dad how he was feeling. ¿Cómo te sientes?
Yo me siento, digamos, como si fuera... Yo me olvidé de mi edad ahorita. Estoy acá en el Mundial divirtiéndome.
He said it's like he's forgotten his age, that he's having fun, and that no one can take away the happiness he's feeling.
Esa alegría no me va a quitar nadie.
Being here, surrounded by Peru fans, makes my dad feel at home. At this point, my dad spent more than half of his life outside of Peru.
Mi sangre es peruana y yo puedo
he says
ser
he'll never forget Peru, and that his blood is Peruvian. Trust me, it sounds poetic in Spanish. He says a part of him will always belong there. It's hard to explain, but it's always felt like a part of me has always belonged in Peru too, even though I wasn't born there.
También siento este pasión y este orgullo, ¿no? Para un país que nunca he vivido. En,
claro.
Como un país que lo siento des, como de ustedes. Ustedes, mm-hmm. ustedes me dan este orgullo.
What I'm saying to my dad is that I also feel this passion and pride for a country I've never even lived in. I feel it because you and mom gave me that pride. My love for Peru is also my love for my parents. When the anthem started, I was ready to sing. I wanted this moment to be special. I looked to my right, and my dad was singing his heart out. Blew the whistle and the game began. The Peruvian squad held their ground, but France was able to score a goal in the 34th minute. And Peru lost 1-0. And just like that, we were officially out of the World Cup. There was no way to advance to the next round. The next day, I took out my recorder and talked about how I felt. When the game ended, I left the stadium, you know, and I held my dad's arm and I started crying. Tears were rolling down my cheeks, you know, and I told my dad, let's just go somewhere to watch the next game. And he looked at me and he was just like, you know, this is your first World Cup. So I understand that you're sad and that it hurts. But you have so many more to live through. And he's right. Maybe we'll have another chance to see Peru play at a World Cup. Maybe not. Whether we win or lose, I know I can always go back to my own little Peru in my parents' home in LA to cry and cheer for a team that has unified my family for so many generations, regardless of where we live.
Cuando despiertan mis ojos y veo que sigo viviendo contigo, Perú.
Our thanks to Janice Yamoka for that story. Peru did not advance past the group stage, But in the team's third and final World Cup game, they scored 2 goals against Australia and secured their first World Cup win since 1978. Janice, of course, watched that game from our office in Harlem, wearing her Peru jersey.
Contigo, Peru. Sobre mi pecho llevo tus colores y están mis amores contigo, Perú. Somos tus hijos y nos uniremos.
Maybe you caught one of the billboards in LA or on the New York City subway for a new TV show called Vida, which is on Stars. It has a majority Latino cast and crew, and it recently wrapped up its first season. The show looks at the relationship between two Latina sisters, Lynn and Emma, as they come to terms with the death of their mom and the secrets she kept from them. Vida also deals with themes like sexuality, identity, family, and gentrification in Boyle Heights, Los Angeles. Showrunner Tania Saracho isn't exactly new to television. She's written for Devious Maids, Girls, Looking, and How to Get Away with Murder. She's also written for the stage, and she's won a number of awards for her plays. Tania was born in Mexico, but moved to the United States as a child, and that's where our conversation begins. Did you feel like you belonged, or were you just like, no, we're just visiting, like, this is just a temporary thing, but I'm really from the other side? Or was it like, yeah, okay, I get this?
I lived in 9 places by the time I was 9 in Mexico, so I had like a survival, like, make friends. That's your survival tactic, right? Make friends right away. Be funny. Be friendly. Because we were like going all over the country, you know, in Mexico. And then I thought the same thing was going to work here, but I had a big accent, you know?
So how do you get from that to writing for television? Because
how do you, right?
Yeah, because you wanted to be an actress. And somewhere along the line, you're like, okay, I can't only be acting. I've got to figure out this other stuff. I've got to figure out how to write. I've got to figure out how to create a theater company. I've got to figure out how to write for television. How does that happen?
Always by accident and organically. Like, I knew I couldn't go to New York because I like to eat. And I knew I was going to starve for a while and live in a shoebox. At least at first, you know, I was watching all my friends do that. So somebody handed me a book that had a giant red S. And it was a Steppenwolf 20-year, like, Steppenwolf Theater, you know, anniversary issue. And they were like, go there. These people, they started a theater company and they're fine. You know, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do that. I arrived with 2 bags in Chicago, found the apartment that weekend, and I'm stayed 17 years in that apartment. Like, it all worked out because I did start a theater company. I'm making it sound easier than it was because it was also I didn't know what it took to start a theater company, like all the non-for-profit 501c3, all that stuff was hard, you know, but I figured it out. You know, you're 22 and you're like dumb in the right way. And it's like, yeah, we can build it. They will come. And they did.
So what is the impetus to say, I'm going to create my own company, my own theater company, and I'm going to call it, what, Teatro Luna?
Auditioning, you know, like doing the audition thing in Chicago. And all the roles I was going for were basically named Maria. All of them.
It's a great name.
It's a great name. But basically,
and they were
the
all
only line,
journalists, right?
They were all journalists, like learned, educated journalists from Chicago. No, unfortunately, they were like, the line would be something like, through here, Mr. Johnson. You know what I mean? Like that's basically what I had to say. Or I'll get it, Mr. Johnson. You know, like it was those kinds of roles, which we are those things. We are those Marias, but that's the only Marias that they were giving us. And so I was like, wait a minute, I'm classically trained. And then I had done a stint in Oxford for a bit too to study Shakespeare. This is crazy. I'm only going for these roles or no lines at all. You know, Teatro Luna, we were all Latinas, and then we tried to, wherever we could, do all Latina work, you know?
So I guess that helps explain why women in the show that you are now running, Vida, I mean, Latinas actually are like everywhere in this show. I don't think I've seen anything quite like it in terms of a drama. It like centers around Latina women.
Yeah, unapologetically.
So you get a phone call from an executive, a Latina executive at Stars, who says, hey, I know that you're a playwright. Do you want to be a showrunner for an episodic drama?
Sort of.
Okay.
It sort of happened. My agent was like, you have a meeting at Stars. And I had just left How to Get Away with Murder. And I was in Denver doing a play. And he was like, you need to come back tomorrow for this meeting. It's an important meeting. No. I was like, I am done for TV for a while. I'm going to wash my TV sins through theater right now. I'm in Denver and there's a snowstorm. I probably can't get out. And you need to come to this meeting tomorrow. Ugh. So I get on a Southwest, like whatever I can find plane for the day. I was like going to just for the meeting. And yeah, it was basically that. It was like, hi, so have you heard of the term chipster? And I was like, yeah, Chicano hipsters. You know, when I met Marta. And then she was like, have you heard of the term gentrification? And I was like, whoa, wait, hold up. And we discussed the term gentrification, the gentrification of a Latinx space by another Latinx, like an upwardly mobile Latinx. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This is amazing. This is like the conversation that it engendered, that it was... that, and I was like, that's an amazing show. I said, I would like to interview for that show. She was like, no, to be the showrunner.
Coming up on Latino USA.
Those are the narratives we've been allowed. Nothing complicated, nothing like this that makes you uncomfortable.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from Fifth Generation Inc., maker of 80-proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, distilled from corn and naturally gluten-free. Recipes and more at titosvodka.com. Distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas. And the Annenberg Foundation, committed to supporting, educating, and engaging communities in the United States and globally for more than 25 years. Learn more at AnnenbergFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And when we left off, Tania Saracho was explaining how she went from struggling to find work as a Latina actress to becoming the showrunner for the hit TV show Vida. We return to our conversation now, where we talk about Vida and my complicated feelings about the show.
So... we're going to talk about your show, Vida. Got a lot of questions.
Uh-oh.
Some concerns. A lot of praise. I got to tell you, you know, I have very mixed feelings about Vida.
Okay, tell me.
And I say that just with the caveat of like, dude, it's an entire show about Latinas and Latinos, queer, all women, you know, women of color. Whoa. So much of it is so important. But when I was talking with my producer and I first started watching, I was like, to me, it feels a little sad. There's a lot of sadness. And you're like, what are you talking about, right?
No, I am, but it's like by design. So often when we've gotten a chance to have a narrative about us, it's like the family has to be in primary colors and really bright and like, look how happy and look how we dance in the kitchen and look how we like it's and it's that narrative that we're used to. And that doesn't like my experience with my family is not that. And a lot of people's is broken and damaged, right? So those are the narratives. It's either good girls, like good family, or narcos, right? And before that, maids. Those are the narratives we've been allowed. Nothing complicated, nothing like this that makes you uncomfortable, because the dominant culture gets to tell their Breaking Bads and they're transparent and they're allowed to be flawed and maybe not likable, but are compelling.
So there is a scene. It's the scene where the sister, Lynn, who is, they call her white. ¿Cómo le dicen en el show? White Tina.
White Tina.
Okay.
White
That's
Tina.
A new word.
Sí.
So in this scene, Lynn, who's called Whitina, ends up hanging out with some super, super, super rich people in L.A.
Jackson, you have to bring this one to Mammoth next weekend. You don't understand. I'm in love with her.
There's this really hard scene where everybody's getting drunk and, you know, a very entitled young white man throws up.
Disgusting. Charlie, you throw up every time.
And the Latina maid comes in with a smile on her face, as she's probably done hundreds of times before. Cleans up the vomit.
She has to keep cleaning it up.
Don't. That's what she's here for.
It's so gross.
And it could have just been left there, but what you end up doing, okay, so spoiler alert, is that on the bus ride home, you know, Whitina, Lynn, is on the same bus as the Latina maid who was just cleaning up the disgusting moment that just happened from these entitled rich white boys. That scene, oof.
No words in that scene.
Yeah.
I dreamt that scene up before I had finished the pilot, I remember, because I found my notes from like 2 years ago. I'm like, oh my God, the scene is like almost the same. And that song from Susana Vaca was in the notes.
That scene, I'll just let you know that it's because of that scene that I will always watch Vida.
Oh, well, I need to come up with more of those scenes and so you can keep watching. Oh, shoot.
But by the way, as we're talking, so much of these storylines, the secrecy, the homophobia, the lies, the hypocrisy, it is a part of who we are as Latinos and Latinas. I mean, I don't have to look that far within my very extended family of several hundred. So I appreciate that honesty, as difficult and as complicated as it is. I appreciate it. And I guess just to end, what's your state of mind as a Latina right now? What's your state of mind, mostly, besides the worrying about, you know, season two?
There is a lot of worry. I am not a citizen. There's a lot of worry in me just with what's happening today, with how we are being viewed right now. When I see us and I see we're so beautiful, complicated, flawed, but beautiful, just like everybody else. And I have this like desire, this like desperate desire to humanize us. I'm linked to a group of people that are not seen as human. And that's, I don't know how to stop that, you know, except to put out humans on TV.
Tania, thank you so much for speaking with us on Latino USA.
Thank you so much. It was so lovely.
Tania Saracho is the showrunner for the television series Vida. The show was recently renewed for a second season. And as we do often, we're going to end our show with a segment we call How I Made It, stories about Latino creators and the work they make. And we're going to go back to the 1980s and early 90s in Colombia. Amidst the political and drug-related violence that was happening there, probably the last thing on anyone's mind was rock and roll. That is, except for a small, up-and-coming band at the time called Aterciopelados. The Latin Grammy-winning duo has been playing together since the early 90s, and they're considered pioneers of the golden era of rock en español. With two decades behind them, they're constantly reinventing themselves, and they've just released their latest album, Claroscura. We spoke to Andrea Echeverri and Héctor Buitrago, and they told us in their own words how they came to be Aterciopelados.
My name is Héctor Buitrago. I am the bass player in Aterciopelados.
My name is Andrea Echeverri. I play the guitar and I sing in Aterciopelados.
In my family, everybody sings, and my mother plays the guitar.
So when we were little, we took guitar lessons. But then I chose art. And music came when I met Hector. We met maybe 1989. Hector had a hardcore band called La Pestilencia, The Pestilence.
It was punk, so I did music without being a musician, no? I want to try another kind of music.
We used to go to a place to dance, and we fell in love, and we formed a band called Delia y los Aminoácidos. And we also founded a bar called Barbarie.
Our bar was a small bar.
That's where we started to play. And that's how Aterciopelados began. In 1990, in terms of a rock scene, there was almost nothing. Pablo Escobar was active.
Se busca Pablo Escobar Gaviria.
There was bombing all the time in Bogotá. It was a very interesting moment because everyone felt like we could die any night.
Narcoterrorismo.
You heard the bombs or you felt like the wave. So it was an intense night scene. Everyone wanted to go out and dance and get drunk and, you know, live while it lasted. Because of the bombs, no groups went to play there in Bogotá.
But the rock en español was growing.
Bands like Los Fabulosos Cadillacs, Soda Stereo, and Caifanes started to get played in the radio.
Because of that, record labels start to sign bands in Colombia. Aterciopelados was one of them, or maybe the first.
I think we were the first ones in many things in Colombia. We were one of the first ones that had a woman
singing.
Adelante, sí. Yeah.
Front woman.
Front woman. Sí, exactly. So I think we have opened a few doors.
After the first record, we tried to build our specific sound of Aterciopelados, like a Colombian rock.
Always trying not to repeat ourselves, but to go further and experiment new things. We've been trying to mix all the things that have been part of our lives, no?
Different kinds of folkloric music of Colombia or traditional music of Latin America.
Como bolero, ranchera. Borracha y
descañotada. A bit of rock. A bit of electronica. A bit of
salsa.
It could be vallenato. It could be
champeta.
Each song,
we try a different thing. Through our songs, we definitely have opinions and criticism and humor.
We had like very clear the things that we wanna say.
That has been
the basis of our work.
To say things. Canción Protesta, for instance, that song was chosen by Amnesty International. They made The Price of Silence based on Canción Protesta. that was important for us.
Claroscura is a diverse album. We are playing with two comic characters. So Hector is Claro, and I'm Oscura. That's like the game.
It's in a song of Claroscura called Duo.
It's about our history. It's about how we met, how we fell in love.
Cuando te conocí, eras un punk del Restrepo.
How things change and nowadays we're so different from then.
It's also like a jingle for us.
Our own jingle.
El bajista, yo artista. A la música le dimos manivela.
We've done so much things together, and even though we're so different, it's a fertile situation in terms of creativity. That's why we are a dynamic duo.
Duo, dinámico, surrealismo mágico. Duo, dinámico.
Maybe the secret is that we haven't been together all the time. You have to walk the road, no? You have to fall and you have to be naive and ignorant and then crash. It's like all parts of being what you are now, no?
No, pues cantar, no, singing.
Sí. Pelea, sé valiente, no dejes que te anestesien. Sangre caliente, hambre en los dientes. Expresa tu verdad, desaparece, sé un canal, alza tu voz. Sé valiente, no te dejes arrastrar por la corriente. No te conformes, di algo que cuente. Comunícate con la gente.
Andrea and Hector are members of the band Aterciopelados. The group's new album is titled Claroscura. That's it for today. Latino USA is produced by Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Andres Caballero, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Fernanda Chavarri. We're edited by Marlon Bishop and Sofia Paliza Carr. Our engineers are Gidi Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrod. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music that you heard, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on the next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. The Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at heisingsimons.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Oh, Janice is in the office. Oh, they're talking about Peru. Oh, something's happening with Peru. Okay.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the ECMC Foundation, working to improve post-secondary educational outcomes for underserved students through evidence-based innovation. Learn more at ecmcfoundation.org. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working alongside others to build a culture of health that provides everyone in America a fair and just opportunity for health and well-being. More at rwjf.org. This is NPR.